No, I would definitely rather have a bigger penis, but I'm a girl, so.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Goldman.
And I'm Kiran Chetri, and this is Future Proof.
So each week, we are going to be providing you some actionable insights and analysis about what's going on in the news and what it kind of portends for the future, which is a great word that doesn't get used often enough. But since this is one of our first few episodes, I feel like I should tell you a little bit about Kiran. We met when I asked her last minute if she would hop in and help out at Innovation Congress that Firebrand Groups hosted this past summer. And she was gracious enough to help out. She's a Peabody winning and Emmy nominated TV anchor and reporter, spent much of the last 15 years at Fox News and CNN and NBC, you know, all of the acronyms. And she's been doing a lot of thought leadership and public speaking on issues that she's passionate about, like rebuilding her birth country, Nepal, after the earthquakes, as well as children's literacy. And we just kind of clicked. We fight a lot, so we might fight on the air. Just a little warning.
But we're still terps. We're still terps.
Yeah, still terp strong. So fast forward a bit, and she's here, and we're launching our show. So thank you, Kiran. And should we start, or do you want to?
Yes, I want to tell you a little bit about Jeremy, if we can.
Fine.
I love the name Future Proof because Jeremy is always a forward-thinking person. And if you're not familiar with him, he's the CEO of Firebrand Group, which is a marketing firm that's based in New York City that I have the pleasure of working at. And, you know, for his clients, Firebrand Group basically helps them predict the future trends, whether it's in marketing and oftentimes technology, helping clients stay ahead a step of the competition. And I really believe that he kind of has it nailed. He's written two books. I can do a little bragging about Jeremy. The whole notion of future proofing basically was his brainchild and his passion. It's sort of, I think, like fireproofing or baby proofing your house. You basically anticipate ways in which bad things can happen, and then you make the changes you need to prevent them from happening. And the concept behind future proof is not just preventing the bad, but also anticipating the good or the better, let's say. And Jeremy, if I can say, I think that we need to all look toward that as we head into 2018 and we're all looking at, you know, what the landscape is right now. And there is a lot going on and there is a lot of changes actually happening in terms of how people get their news and information and how people figure out what they're supposed to do with their companies.
I mean, for me, one of the top things that I'm kind of covering and thinking about in the news, and I know you are too, is kind of how a major thought leader goes to actually interact with their audience, right? So, I mean, this is mm-hmm. something that you have with obviously the president right now going directly to people to talk to them about a book that he's not so happy about. And in some ways, this is almost the future of book promotion because this has been the best gift ever, I feel like.
How much would you love it, right? How much would you love it if basically, you know, your book getting a like and all of those, the president tweeted, which is what happened. Just a little bit of background. Michael Wolff, well known as a, I guess you could say a biographer. He most famously wrote a biography about Trump, of course, the president. But before that, he also wrote a biography about another not so popular Republican. And basically you have the president, which is, in my opinion, as a journalist, extraordinary, actually telling him, you know, to the American people via Twitter that this guy's an idiot and that everything he says is wrong. Yet this is the part that makes me crazy, Jeremy, is that he basically claims he has hours and hours, up to 200 hours of actual tape recordings showing that the president actually did A, allow him to be interviewed by him, and B, allow him to be interviewed by his staffers, and the president saying this is a lie. And so what I find so fascinating is who is to be believed in this world of instantaneous tweeting and the social media where before you can even verify something, it's already out there?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot there to unpack. But I mean, I think probably one of the top things that I take away from this is that you have the ability now to, I mean, on one hand, it's so easy for everybody, authors included, to document every single interview that you have to prove that something's true, right? On the other hand, we are now having debates about whether or not something's true or not, simply when we know it to be true. Like, it's kind of like how, as Trump famously said, what, he could go shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and a lot of people wouldn't care. I'm totally messing up exactly his statement.
No, I know exactly what you're saying. Basically, he's saying that, like, you can say whatever you want to say, and if it somehow comes out, it's supposedly the truth, which I find also fascinating because I misspoke earlier when I said it was about a top Republican, but it was Rupert Murdoch. Michael Wolff wrote a book about Rupert Murdoch as well. So now you have people coming out in real time saying Michael Wolff is to be trusted, or Michael Wolff's story is not to be trusted. Then you have the president. And this is what I find so fascinating, Jeremy, because we both came up in the time where, God, you didn't even, I mean, if anything came out, it was like an official statement. And now you have the president of the United States with his own Twitter account, not, you know, something that comes out of the White House, basically saying whatever he wants to say, refuting things. And what I wonder is there an imprint? Is there a fingerprint of this? If this, any of this were to go to, let's say, a court, you know, some people are calling for his, you know, for him to be impeached, but how much does social media impact really the record, the congressional record and our historical record?
Well, I think that one of the things that we're really up against right now is an evolution in the way that a president or that a leader can communicate directly with their audiences. Now, there's a big question, and I think that this is always the thing that I try to look at, is that, is this a blip or is this a long-term trend, right? I mean, there are, you know, so there are certain elements of what's going on right now that are a blip, and there are certain things that will be a long-term trend. On the blip side of things, you've got somebody who, for better or for worse, I think for worse, is totally unfiltered and almost shameless with their ability to say certain things, do certain things, say, my button is bigger than yours, right? You know, there are a lot of people who, even if something was a strategically sound move, they wouldn't necessarily be able to bring themselves to say it. So that's kind of the blip side, is that whoever the next leader is not going to be like this, because most people are not like this. You're not going to find that many other leaders who are going to take these type of moves. Now, I think the long-term trend that you're talking about is a really important aspect of this, right? Because whoever is the next leader is going to go and make their case directly to the audience. You kind of saw that to some extent with Obama doing a number of things to reach younger voters and millennials with Between Two Ferns, right? So that was a beginning of
Cisse put a, you know, the entire movement. You're absolutely right. But what you said that just really kind of put it together for me is that you explain the unfiltered aspect. Usually a president has a team of public relations people, and yes, they do utilize social media such as Twitter, but when you say unfiltered, it really is unfiltered. I mean, Trump tweets directly to people, and you know what Michael Wolff was getting at is that he doesn't have, I guess, the presidential credentials, so to speak, to understand when that's harmful and when it's not. And the question is, like, what does it bode for leadership? But also what I find is, what does it mean for the people who are critical of him, and also the people who can find out in real time. I mean, he wrote, Google, you think that, you know, what I said is true? Google Michael Wolff, see what he's all about. And so Trump was actually basically begging the American public to say, if you believe what this guy's saying, go ahead and Google him. And he has had, you know, a history of, I guess you could say, controversy. And the book that he wrote about Rupert Murdoch, for example, was considered mired in controversy because there are questions about how much he really got on the record and how much he was doing for his own, you know, basically just to be able to sell books. And he actually sent out another tweet, which, again, we're talking about social media, that said, thank you, Trump, for talking about my book so much, for doing what he did, which was cease and desist, and claiming that Michael Wolff was not credible in what he said. And he goes, I should send you a box of chocolates because what you basically did was help me sell more books. So we're really looking at something that's unprecedented in my mind, especially as a journalist, which is you would never, never just go out there with things that are not triple sourced and also have a real-time reaction, not only from your colleagues, but from the person that you're talking about. To me, that's astounding.
There's a big difference in, and actually, so to me, yeah, you hit on, I think, a really important thing, which is the evolution of journalism and publishing in general, right? I mean, there are a few different things that are unique about this situation. If you look at kind of how journalism has moved towards this, I mean, it's always been for profit, you know, you know that, yes. But yes. At the same time, we are so much more data driven now that if something is going to sell, right, and I know that I'm kind of merging in, you know, like broadcast cable news with you know, publishing a book that has some salacious details in there. But I mean, it goes back towards like, where are incentives? So Michael Wolff, obviously, the more books he's able to sell, the better it is for him, right? You kind of have to look at it from an incentive standpoint. Yes. On the president's side and say, is this something that's in his best interest to talk about? I think that he's always kind of believed that that old adage about no publicity being bad publicity.
Yes, I was just going to say that. You're absolutely right. Like,
and I think that the idea of the cease and desist and blah, 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 and all of this stuff, it just seems to me like you can either think that there are a lot of people think that he's incredibly smart. There are a lot of people think he's incredibly stupid. I think he can do both. He's capable of doing both. I think that you're not even beyond stupid if you think that a cease and desist and tweeting about it is going to stop people from reading it. Obviously, he knew that more attention was going to be paid to it. Yeah. So he knew about that.
Firebrand, like, who the hell is doing his PR, right? I mean, there's nobody in my mind that would tell him it's a good idea to basically try to eviscerate this guy. I mean,
well, if you don't want people
to just give him more attention. Right.
If you don't want people to read it, now, I think the thing that most people don't understand about Trump, and I think the reason why he's president, and I'm really trying to keep my views as much out of it as possible, because I can't think of, you know, a lot of people who I would less, you know, rather have as president. But that being said, I mean, it's very, very hard to look at the way that he acts as anything other than the more attention, the better, regardless for what. So, you know, I mean, barring, you know, dragging his little button up and down, you know, DC naked. I mean, I think that there's most other things he would basically do in order for attention. He knew that this would get more attention and therefore he did it, you know? So,
You're exactly right, Jeremy. And the thing that I ask you from like sort of a marketer standpoint is that if Donald Trump was your client, which, you know, would probably be improbable, but if he was our client, let's say, and, he said, you know, I just want to go rogue. I just want to like say whatever I want to say. I want to put it out there. I want to do this. I want to do that. And you're trying to like support this guy and make sure that, you know, he puts his best face forward. It seems to me that he has failed on many levels, and I'm not a huge partisan, I will say that. But I am actually really gobsmacked about the fact that this is somebody who seems to have absolutely no marketing strategy, no public relations strategy. It's just, it seems that whatever his thought is at that moment comes out in a tweet. And that, again, goes back to the power of social media. He doesn't get muzzled because before anybody can ever tell him what is right or wrong, he's already said it. And so I am just really fascinated as a journalist to understand this entire situation with him, because there have been a lot of popular, unpopular presidents. You know, there were a ton of people that didn't believe Obama was even born in America, right? And there was a ton of people that thought George Bush was the devil. But that lack, it seems to me, of any type of public relations or marketing or any type of strategy as it relates to talking to the press, seems to me that we have crossed a line that I've never seen before in my lifetime, at least.
Well, I think that sometimes people have strategies, they don't necessarily make sense to other people. I mean, I look at it and I say, there was a time where I had the opportunity to work at Google and Accenture, and I was turning down opportunities when I didn't actually have a job and I had a certain strategy in terms of my career, and it made no sense to anybody in the world but me, right? So is having a strategy that seems counterintuitive to other people no strategy, or is it just a bad strategy? And
you were not responsible for like the entire like free world, meaning that like if they said, Jeremy Goldman, I want you right now to become the chief strategist for Donald Trump, would you say it's a great idea for him to just go off the hinge and send out tweets that he felt at that exact moment? I highly doubt that.
Yeah, everything that I do is very data driven, because I think that data is a great way to be able to see which direction things are going long term.
Because you're a nerd.
Yeah, I'm a nerd. I was not popular in high school / rest of life. If you think about it, like if you're going to make decisions off of data, one good thing to look at would be, how are Trump-related properties, and these aren't necessarily Trump-related, I'm not talking about actually, you know, a Trump-owned.
You're not talking about Mar-a-Lago. I know, right. You're not talking about Mar-a-Lago.
Anything that is branded. Anything that is branded Trump, how has his presidency and even his candidacy before that, how have they done and performed on the market? And I mean, for instance, Ivanka has had issues selling some of her stuff, and not just because it sucks, but also because, you know, just her brand is tarnished in some ways. I think that there are, you know, condos in New York City that had leased the Trump name that have taken the Trump name off of the front of the buildings.
Yes, yes.
So, again, it goes down to like you can have a strategy, but it can be a bad strategy. He might believe that the more fame, the better. I just think that, you know, over time there are diminishing returns. I mean, once you've become famous enough to become president, at some point you should probably focus on making moves that don't appear to be criminal or don't appear to be very juvenile in nature, such as implying that you have a big penis. You know, on Twitter, I mean, I think great for you. I mean, I'd rather have a really small one and a little bit more brain power if I was running the country, but that's just me.
No, I would definitely rather have a bigger penis, but I'm a girl, so what do I know?
Yeah, I think that we have to probably use that ahead of this episode, before the music. But anyway, so yeah, we'll edit that in later.
Basically, brag that you had a big penis. Whatever. Okay. So then, the second topic that I want to ask you about, on this same vein, is the power of social media. And you, as a you know, media strategist and somebody who understands the power of social media, this guy, Logan Paul, okay? My kids are 11 and 9 and 10 and 12 and 14, don't ask. But anyway, the fact that this guy, Logan Paul, who is like known as a huge, you know, YouTuber that a lot of people follow, apparently he went to, I believe it was Japan, and there was something known as like a suicide like forest or something along those lines. And he was doing his own usual stuff, which he says is basically just like real life. Next thing you know, he comes upon somebody who looks like they're hanging dead. And it was basically a suicide video. And they claim that this is a crucial turning point for YouTube. Okay. This guy's gotten now eviscerated.
I actually like was following this in real time when it happened, which is crazy because it was a good way to end the year. This was like one of the last things that happened last year, I feel like, because he posted it on YouTube on December 31st. He has, yeah, like a little bit more than 15 million followers. And then
which is, give me, I mean, as a marketer, like if you have 15 million followers on YouTube, you're like a success because you get paid for that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that that's like in a lot of ways, that's what everybody's trying to do is they're trying to get as many followers as possible in order to monetize that. And then that gets into like a whole nother topic that we should talk about is like fame.
I know, but for people who don't understand, if you are a popular YouTuber, you actually get money, right, from advertisers. So your whole entire goal ostensibly is that you give content that is so exciting that people are willing to come to you and you get paid for it. So there is strategy as it relates to this, where you want the most amount of people to see you so you can make money.
Yeah.
And this is what this guy does.
Right. So this is the flip side of, and in some ways this ties into the Trump thing, which is that if somebody makes a misstep and they have a large following, they've stepped in it with so many different people at the same time. So for instance, Logan Paul took down the video the next day, January 1st, right? He posted an apology on Twitter, which was not a great apology, frankly, on the 1st. And then he posted another apology, in a video to his YouTube channel, the next day. So this is already 2 days later, but then he still got a lot of other people who are pretty big on YouTube, you know, which is important because those are the people who are also following him, who are all really upset and disgusted over the whole situation, right? I mean,
however, there's no way they're going to stop. I mean, there's no way that this misstep, quote unquote, is going to make people like not be on his channel. Again, we go back to the whole idea of, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity. There's no way that people are going to stop following him. If anything, he probably added viewers because I didn't know who the heck this dude was.
Yeah, I mean, you add some people and you lose some people. There is a petition on change.org right now to delete Logan Paul's YouTube channel, right? I mean, and he's somebody who tries to get away with a lot of different things. The key thing
you're saying that before this quote unquote accidental coming upon a dead body, that there were other things that he did that made people think that he was maybe not, you know, the greatest person to follow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like a fan of his stuff, but there are a lot of people in general like who might be. But the key thing is fame for fame's sake. I mean, you got to think of it in the frame of you're going to lose some followers and you're going to gain some, right? But it might be a net negative and it might be a net positive. I kind of liken it to listening to Rush Limbaugh, right? Which is that he has a net negative a neutral effect on society because he, for every, you know, 10 people he riles up to go out and vote or do something, he riles 10 people up on the other side.
So it's the thought that like basically the people that hate you look at you as much as the people that like you, right? But what I'm curious about is because you usually are very, I don't know how to put it, you're very like not laissez-faire, but you're very let people think what they want to think. Why is it that you said you're not a huge fan of this Logan Paul? What has he done before that made you not like think that he's a good guy?
Well, I don't want to say I don't know him at all. I mean, I think that he's, I mean, a vlogger and actor who I first saw on Vine a while ago now, I feel like, and he's done like a little bit of acting on the side. I mean, so I don't know anything about him, or I can't say that I'm like an expert specifically about him. I know, like, I kind of like his brother, Jake, who has like a decent following. But I mean, you know, it's the whole...
What do you think? He's just an opportunist. He's an opportunist who's going to like do or whatever for shock value. Is that, you don't think he's authentic?
It's...
Because I know you like authenticity.
I don't know anybody who hates authenticity, right? Could so you imagine like somebody in their Tinder profile? I hate people who are authentic.
I hate authenticity. However, I know that you are somebody who I know to be, because we've become fast friends, that it doesn't matter if you agree with them politically or you agree with them for whatever reason. If you believe they're coming from a place of, I really truly believe this, you will give them the benefit of the doubt. So if you, who is the nicest person I've met, thinks somebody's not quite right, my idea is that maybe you think that they're doing it not just because they believe that, but because they want to get a gain, whatever it may be, monetary or fame.
I kind of liken this to, are you familiar with the gorilla channel that's trending?
Well, I know. I love silverbacks. I'm married to one. I love silverbacks. They're really sweet.
I don't know if that means that if you, does that mean you have like, you know, white hair on your back, or, well, anyway, so.
No, it means that my husband does, but anyway, go on.
So Gorilla Channel was something that was actually fake, that was put out there. There was a fake excerpt of the Michael Wolff book where basically they were saying that Trump kept demanding to see the Gorilla Channel. So this fake excerpt of the book was something that got to be so viral because people actually thought maybe Trump was obsessed with this Gorilla Channel. I think that that's something that it says something about somebody's character when people believe something about them. So with Logan Paul, I think that people believed him enough that this is core to his identity that they didn't like his initial Twitter apology.
No, they did not. And his Twitter apology was that he does all of this stuff, is, you know, online, and he's doing these YouTube things 5 days, you know, 7 days a week, and that it maybe that blurred his, I guess, judgment, and that if he ever made somebody feel as though he was advocating suicide or doing this for some reason to make himself, you know, appear better, that in fact he was doing the opposite, that he was actually trying to say, look, this is such a tragedy, and I hope to God this doesn't happen. However, there were a lot of people who said, bullshit, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I think that you did this.
When people don't believe you, that says
what you were doing.
Right.
Exactly. When people don't believe you, you lose the authenticity factor, which in my mind is the entire reason why YouTube and other ways to get, you know, information have basically trumped, don't mean Donald Trump, but trumped the typical like television news, you know, algorithm, which is what I was brought up in, is because people want to see authenticity. So I think there's some people that believe bullshit. You knew that if you showed a picture of a dead body and pretended to be upset about it, that you were going to somehow get more viewers to your YouTube channel, and we're calling your bluff.
So, that's why, by the way, you know, kind of going full circle back to politics, man, there's a lot of politics. I mean, you know, we think about like the history of like the direction where people are going, and oh wow, there's this whole pile on mentality and it's happening now. But in reality, it's not, you know, new in the year 2018. I'm looking now at a story February 2007. And this was actually when Joe Biden was planning, he was focusing on his official announcement that he was running for president. But then he actually said, I mean, you got the first mainstream African-American who is articulate and bright and clean and a nice looking guy. I mean, that's a storybook,
yes, I remember
man.
This.
Now, what's interesting to me about that is it was a very mild controversy. And the reason why it was pretty mild is because Obama said he wasn't offended by the comments because he's friends with Biden right. and because they served together right. and because people knew the guy's yes. character. Now, when people...
Yes, man, I remember and I... Oh my God. Oh my God. I remember this so well because Biden happens to be, you know, I hail from Delaware and Biden is basically like foot in mouth and everyone was like, why would Obama pick him? Right. And it ended up amazingly masterful choice when you put that person against Sarah Palin. Okay. Which made John McCain look like he was just flailing and doing.
Oh, you betcha.
But when he said, you betcha. Okay. I read several things. I read a vast variety of things. Anyway, so go Katie Couric. But anyway, what I mean is that I think that exactly what you said, that Biden basically said he's good, he's clean, he's this, he's that. And, you know, we forget that people come from like a lot of different areas of the country. And he was actually excited about Obama. But saying that in Delaware would be like, people would be like, exactly. He's like a bright, clean, like nice, you know. And then where does that play in New York? Where does that play in California? No, it doesn't play well. And what you exactly explained is that immediately Obama said, look, we've worked together on a lot of legislation. I don't believe that he said that in any way to mean to be racist. And, you know, that's just what it is. And you're absolutely right. However, I believe that if that same comment came out of the mouth of Donald Trump today about another person in the Senate or wherever, like Sheila Jackson Lee, she looks bright, she looks clean, it would be like the end of his presidency. And part of that is because of what I believe to be the social media. There is a vast majority of Americans who now have buyer's remorse about Donald Trump. Let's just be real about that. I'm not saying I do. I didn't actually vote because I think both of them sucked. I'll tell you that. But what I'm telling you is that there is a vast amount of buyer's remorse as it relates to the president. So he can't just shimmy off that comment as easily as Joe Biden did. And I don't know, and maybe you can correct me on this if you think I'm wrong, that it has to necessarily do with social media or the whole platform. I think it has to do with people understanding that Joe Biden was a longtime senator. And so are we willing to give that dude the benefit of the doubt, especially when Obama was like, he didn't mean it like that versus Trump?
I just think it was the fact that, you know, you had somebody who was generally speaking a decent human being. And then you have Trump who is Trump.
So you're saying exactly what I'm saying. You're saying that he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt because there's a vast majority of people that don't think Trump is a decent human being.
And this is kind
right?
of like, I think when we're thinking about like future proofing your own brand, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf, right? I mean, after a while in the public eye and saying certain things,
true.
Whether or not you're Donald Trump or Logan Paul, the proof is kind of in the pudding. And I think probably this is a good time to wrap up now for this episode. So, once again, I am Jeremy Goldman.
And Jeremy Goldman is hungry.
Yes, Jeremy Goldman is hungry.
I'm kidding. No, I love this conversation and we'll continue it. And I'm Kieran Chetri and this is Future Proof. And it was awesome having this conversation, Jeremy.
Ditto. Talk to you soon.